Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Roerink, Jack Spencer, and Jacob Kanzler. A little later, the House Minority Leader, Sam Singh, will be speaking with us. But first, guys, we are officially, hopefully, halfway done with lame duck. We allegedly have two more weeks left to go, and unless they decide they want to come back on Sine Die Day, but that would probably conflict with too many vacations to actually happen. And so let's just hope that that's not the case. But I want to start with the national coverage that Michigan has gotten now, that we're being roped in with Wisconsin in this idea that the Republican-led legislature is trying to curtail the powers of the incoming Democratic office holders, Dana Nessel, Jocelyn Benson, and Gretchen Whitmer, the Secretary of State and Attorney General, Governor-elect. Jacob, I want to start with you on this. Is that fair to put Michigan in that box?
What I would say is, I mean, it makes a good national narrative, but if you look at the situation here on the ground, I think it's a little more nuanced. And the reason I say that specifically, and if I'm wrong or misunderstanding this, please correct me, but on the Verhulen bill, the bill that gives the legislature the ability to intervene in any suit,
which you have coined, by the way.
The any suit, anytime legislation.
Which I like. I ran that by people last week, and they all loved it.
That's good. So my understanding, and this is from Verhulen, and the bill is pretty simple, but the idea is that it gives the legislature just automatic ability to intervene in any suit. And he says that does not affect what the AG can do on behalf of the state of Michigan. So when it's when you're seeing like one or two sentence summaries saying that this bill would kind of gut the power of the incoming AG or limit her powers, I don't see that. And if I'm missing that, I want to know that. However, why I say it's nuanced is you have that, but then you have other bills like the Robertson Secretary of State bills that have a bit more of a different intention.
And see, that's what I'm looking at, guys, because I think to rope Michigan into this idea that we're trying to strip the powers away from Gretchen Whitmer and Dana Nessel coming in the door takes away from what is actually going on, John, and that is this elections commission, which would take power away from the Secretary of State. And reviewing the bills that are in lame duck, that really seems to be the only one that really does physically take real powers away from the Secretary of State. And I'm not counting this bill that would change how the Michigan State Police Director is appointed, because it doesn't look like that's going anywhere.
I think Jacob is right. In this world driven by Twitter and sound bites, it's probably too hard to resist for national media to not want to rope Michigan and Wisconsin in that same storyline, because it's a good storyline. Republicans trying to cheat Democrats out of rightfully earned power through the electoral process. But, you know.
So, Jack, why are they doing the election commission? So I guess we're concurring at this point that the only bill that really has that type of impact is the one dealing with Jocelyn Benson in this elections commission. Why are they bothering to do this?
Well, that's the big question, because any kind of good government argument or anything goes out the window when you stop and think that no one even whispered this before the election. To me, it's inexplicable. That's not something that passes the smell test when you see how this has come down the pike, or it didn't come down the pike. It just suddenly showed up after the election. The other stuff I grade, migrate how I judge things for the other political stuff is, okay, what if the thing was reversed and we'd had 30 years of the Dems in control of things and the Dems in control of the gerrymandering pen and everything else? Would they now be doing the same thing the Republicans are if it was switching? And my answer to all those other ones is, yeah, they'd probably be doing the same kind of stuff. But this thing with the campaign finance stuff, that is just really hard to not look at and say something's going on behind this that just doesn't seem to really, like I say, pass the smell test.
Well, particularly, Jake, when you look at some of the other bills that are out there, including this protection bill that you can't even look into who is funding these nonprofit ads, these 501c4s that Craig Mauger, our old friend, likes to talk about as being dark money. That's going through here, a statute of limitations on how far back you can go on campaign finance stuff of 5 years. Like Jack says, these are things nobody's talked about before.
Yeah, and to go back to your point, I think you would add that nonprofit bill into the list of bills that we said that appear to be limiting the power, because I think it's something in there about prohibiting state officers from making rules, and so that might apply to Jocelyn Benson, Gretchen Whitmer. But yeah, so when the Robertson campaign finance bills dropped, I was very interested to see how they'd be defended in the public square. And so far, all we've heard is that other states have this. We need bipartisan cooperation and that we want to take it out of a partisan office, which is very interesting considering that Ruth Johnson has been the Secretary of State for the past 8 years.
Right. So it makes you wonder, are there things that the Secretary of State office is looking at that maybe there are some folks within that Republican circle they don't want Jocelyn Benson to be looking at?
Well, when was the last time we had a Democratic Secretary of State? What, Richard Austin, right? How long ago was that? 16 years ago?
2002.
Yeah, 2002. My guess is that they probably have some bones in their closet and they're wondering how deep is Jocelyn Benson and her new team going to look at what we've been doing.
And that could create a real problem, I suppose.
A real problem.
Well, you got to remember, though, whatever they do with this new commission, presuming it goes through, that's going to also protect Democrats. So that's what makes me wonder if it isn't something specific that they are trying to prevent from getting out. Because it's not like they're just going to change this around and all of this new commission is just going to benefit Republicans.
This gums up
both sides. So you then start thinking, wait a minute, is it about going forward or are they afraid of somebody looking back?
I see what you're saying. And so that's why they would want it all gummed. That's why they want it gummed up, and they gum it up for both sides. And that's a risk that they're willing to take so that they don't get penalized for something that happened before. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, well, I don't know. And understand if anybody thinks we're being too critical, look, this is just zip out of come out of nowhere, and you're kind of flying around trying to intellectually figure it out.
But would Snyder actually sign this, Jacob? Because it seems like this is why Snyder vetoes stuff. It's either because it limits the power of the executive branch. That's one. Two, it is something that he doesn't feel like it can be funded long term, and it puts like a permanent crimp in the budget. Or three, there's some type of technical good government thing he doesn't like about it. I mean, he has vetoed campaign stuff before, and then the legislature has addressed its concerns, and mm-hmm. He's signed it, whatever. But those are the three things that he's vetoed things for before. And I wonder if this elections commission is something that he would veto because it would violate number three.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people need to realize, and I think Democrats already realize, that Governor Snyder is a lame duck as well. He has nothing to prove to anybody really after this. And so while you can see the case for him signing, pro-business measures like the changes made to minimum wage and paid sick leave that are more palatable to the business community, he's going to have to come up with a way to publicly defend this campaign finance commission as a good government initiative. And so the question remains if he's able to do that. And part of me thinks that he would not go along with it, but we've seen him go along with the wishes of a more conservative legislature from time to time, whether it's right to work or what have you.
We haven't touched about the changes that are being suggested for Proposal 2 and Proposal 3, and I hesitate to see changes because it is really more implementation legislation. And starting with Proposal 2, it's how you define a partisan and stopping partisan people from being a part of the redistricting process, which is what I really think this bill is about, John. It's not limiting the power of this redistricting commission, but what it's doing is it's doing two things. First of all, it's laying the groundwork for the fact that the legislature can come and do some kind of amending and set some parameters for this elections commission. So it's groundbreaking in one sense. And so that's why I'm sure that's why you're getting pushback from the Proposal 2 people. They don't want any legislative interference. So that's why you would automatically get it. But I think the real point of this bill is that the Republicans don't want the Democratic Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, bringing in, let's say a Mark Brewer or somebody like that to be the staff for this new elections commission. I think that's what they're really worried about.
Oh, I think you're probably right. I think you're probably right, though. But it's still enormously difficult to amend this at this point, isn't it? I mean, we still have to have the high vote threshold.
Well, no, because they're not amending the Constitution. You can't amend the Constitution as a legislature, right? So what they're doing is they're creating some parameters for this redistricting commission. They're saying, okay, this is our definition of a partisan. Since you didn't define what a partisan is, we're going to do the definition. This is what a partisan is. And by the way, the staff that you hire, you didn't put this in your constitutional language, but the staff that you hire can't be a partisan, and this is our definition of a partisan.
I'm more cynical than that. I agree with Senator Ananick when he says that they're setting up their lawsuits. I think that the part there, particularly with the staff, how broadly do you interpret someone with no connection with either party? And is it even possible to find anyone to help you as far as staff goes that somebody can't brush and say, oh, she's a Democrat. Oh, no, she's obviously a Republican. That one part of the other ones, I don't think of that way as directly, but that one aspect of what the Republicans are doing to that struck me immediately as that sounds like a lawsuit in the making.
Yeah, the proposal to implementation legislation is more interesting to me because you have that point, and obviously Republicans have criticized Proposal 2, Redistricting Commission, as a Democrat-fueled thing. And so I see these changes as a way for maybe Republicans to look at this and say, well, we're going to make sure that no Democrats infiltrate this,
whether it's
especially with the staff. But then, of course, this is very interesting for another level, too, because the Prop 2 group is crying against this because they believe that the amendment has a language that it's self-executing. It doesn't need any implementation language. So they're going to make the case that this is breaking the Constitution. And then third, there is still skepticism out there. I'm sure that these could somehow be a vehicle bill for something else, Prop 2 and Prop 3, although you get into kind of a sticky situation because if you attempt in any way to amend a constitutional amendment, you need that higher vote threshold. So I don't know if that trick is even in the bag for Republicans to kind of sub in a whole new bill that would change the amendment.
Let me just be clear, though. I mean, you can't amend the Constitution as the legislature, so there is no vote threshold. That's only if you're trying to amend a citizen's initiative, which is what we would have had to do if the voters had approved, let's say, the minimum wage. There is no vote threshold because the legislature cannot amend the Constitution. That can only be done with a vote of the people. So this is just implementation stuff. You mentioned Proposal 3, though, Jacob, and we're not seeing the same level of consternation with that one. It seems that the Republicans are working with the proponents of Proposal 3 on the technical aspects of getting people registered to vote 14 days before an election and what that looks like. You have to do it in person. Can it be not just the clerk, but maybe somebody that the clerk assigns? Does it have to be at the offices, or can it be, let's say you're over in Timbuktu Township up in wherever county, like Alcona or somewhere up there, right? And maybe their township office isn't open, and maybe it's more convenient to do it at a church, like voter registration drive day on a Saturday, over at a place where people gather. Can you do something like that? And it seems like the Republicans are willing to go there and make it more about good government. This Proposal 2 one, I'm a little leery. And I agree with you, Jack. I don't know if you can take the politics out of this, because who else is involved in doing redistricting but partisans?
It's awful hard to find anybody who's not worked for one side or another, or you can't find some record of them somewhere back being on one side or another. And the other thing I wonder, and I'm not an attorney, nor have I played one on TV, but if they put this thing in the court for the next 6 years, who draws the maps in 220?
God, I hazard to think it might be the courts, but is that what you're thinking?
I think they planned what they were going to do with these different proposals, and I have a feeling they started targeting this one and had a pretty good idea what they were going to do with it before the election even. And if this thing passes, this is what we're going to do, and my guess is kick it into the courts as long as it can be kicked into the courts.
So you're talking about if they actually pass this implementation language and the proposal to proponents kick into court, does that throw the whole elections commission
or the redistricting commission into court?
If
the proposal to people start setting it up and they start saying, look who you hired here, boom, phew, zip right into court. I think they're throwing
they're trying to throw the
monkey wrench into it. That would be my guess. Mm. And of course, I'm a very cynical person, but it's because I've been watching this stuff for a long time.
I don't blame your cynicism at all, and I guess we are dealing about politics when you're talking about redistricting. So, all right, well, with that, let's move on to our interview here with Samson.
All right, joining me now is Sam Singh. He's the House Minority Leader. Sam, are you going to miss this great office in like a week or two? I mean, this is too bad.
Well, listen, I've really enjoyed, serving in the legislature these past 6 years. Obviously, my colleagues for the last 4 years have allowed me to be in leadership, and so it's been a great experience. At the same time, when you know you come in with term limits, you actually know that you're leaving at a specific date. I'm actually looking forward to what's next in the world.
Jeez. Yeah, but it's so sad to walk in here and see things in boxes, and you got that huge roll of
bubble wrap. We're going to have to wrap up some stuff. Yeah, so it was kind of funny. Right after the election, I came into the office. The bubble wrap was already here, and so I think the capital maintenance people were giving me a clue. It's time for you to get ready to make your transition.
When do you have to leave this?
I think the 21st, that Friday, I think everyone is anticipating being out of their offices, whether they're at the Hob or here in the Capitol. I mean, obviously, that following Monday is Christmas Eve and so forth, and they want to be able to make that that transition. So,
but if a constituent has a problem on December 26th, they can still call you, right?
Yeah, they can obviously still call us. They can still call the number. You know, people will, you know, get connected. But will I actually be here in this office? They're probably going to be doing a lot of repairs and things like that.
You tore this place up, man. You know, this is heavy maintenance in here.
We did. No, we had a really good experience. You don't ever want to do anything in the Capitol offices because these guys really follow the rules to the T. I mean, they obviously have a lot of historical respect for the for these rooms, and so do I.
So, lame duck, the most disgusting bill you have seen so far in lame duck. I want to get one. The most disgusting bills you've seen so far are?
Well, this is really hard because they've given us such a wide array of bad ideas. I think the overall the idea that they can decide to subvert democracy, that they'll take ballot initiatives and try to gut them after they've been passed either by the legislature or by the people, or because they lost every statewide seat, they want to now rig the attorney general's office or the secretary of state's office or even curtail the governor's powers. Those types of things, the fact that just shows them as sore losers, the fact that they are willing to go against the people and their decisions, it's just been disgusting. And my hope is that, you know, some of these will die their own death in these chambers as they go forward, or at least the governor will have a moment of conscience and decide to veto these. But that's, to me, been the worst. I get that you have a conservative point of view, but this idea that you will curtail the vote of the people, that you will try to take executive power away just because you're in political power now and you're about to get out of it in January is disgusting to me.
Well, let's unpack this a little bit. Let's start with the ballot initiatives, because what they're doing is they're making implementation language for Proposal 2 and Proposal 3. What's wrong with adding some definitions so we know, for example, what a partisan is?
Well, I think we can do that, but they're not having conversations with Democrats. They're not bringing people to the table. They're saying, hey, we want to make these proposals to our political advantage. So if they were actually seriously wanting to implement these proposals with good ideas, they'd have us at the table. They'd have the incoming Secretary of State as well as the outgoing Secretary of State at the table, and they're not doing that. This is all being done with a handful of Republicans in the room together, groups like the Freedom Fund and the Voss family in the background, just trying to push an extreme agenda. So there is no real dialogue happening here. So this idea that they just needed to implement something or put some defining language is BS, in my opinion. They are actually trying to subvert the vote of the people, and the people will remember that for years to come.
All right, so we're talking about now the Verhulen bill, this bill that would give the legislative immediate standing on any matter that has to do with legislation. How does that take power away from the Attorney General? It would seem like it empowers the legislative branch and gives the legislative branch more power, but does it really take power away from the Attorney General?
Well, what it does is it gives something that the legislature doesn't need. The legislature already has the ability to request from a court their ability to join into a legal matter if the legislature has something to say. And the fact that they're doing this is only occurring in these last few weeks after the election is meant to try to subvert the power of the Attorney General. It's also subverting the power of the courts to make the decision when the legislature should be in. And I think in the end is blatantly illegal. I think you'll see the court cases that will come if this is actually signed by the governor. My hope is that his legal counsel will make a recommendation to the governor to veto this. But if it doesn't, I will tell you that there will be a court case that I believe will quickly find this to be unconstitutional.
As far as the legislature is concerned, maybe they're worried worried that Dana Nessel isn't going to defend some of the laws that they pass, and they want to make sure that somebody's out there arguing for some laws that they pass. Let's take the telemedicine abortion bill that I bring up. What if Dana Nessel doesn't want to defend that in court and the legislature is of the mindset, well, shoot, if she isn't going to do it, then we got to make sure that we're in a position where we can defend it. What's wrong with that?
Well, again, there is constitutional provisions on who is the legal authority for the state of Michigan. And there is nothing that says that the legislature is doing that. So you're actually giving me the answer to your question earlier. You're actually telling me that this is exactly what they're trying to do, subvert the power of the attorney general, which is actually a separation of powers, which is why that bill will be found to be unconstitutional in the end. Listen, the people have spoken. They have elected Democrats for the top three positions, and these bills that are coming forward are only coming in these last couple of weeks because the Republicans are trying to strip away power from those three women.
So let's take a look at the Secretary of State bills, this new elections commission that they want to establish. Where do you think that's coming from?
Well, I think it's coming from a number of things. One is they want to strip away power from Jocelyn Benson.
But why?
Well, I think those are the questions that the media should be asking. I read the reports this past week of the lead sponsor's staff member who's under investigation. Is that perhaps one of the motivating factors for this? If that is, that to me is corruption at its worst. If it just happens to be coincidence, it happens to be coincidence. But I think there's a big question to be asked. Why is this bill being pushed in these last couple of weeks, especially when the lead sponsor staff and other pieces of their campaign finances are under investigation? But to me, again, this was just another part of the Republican playbook. Just try to take away political power from those who beat them in their elections. To me, it's just they're being sore losers, and it's time for them to put away that agenda and focus on things that people care about. We ran a campaign about roads, about PFAS, about protecting our water, making sure our schools are funded. They could be using these last 2 weeks to actually be doing things that actually are meaningful to people, and they're not addressing any of that. Listen, we're on the week three of lame duck, and we don't have anything additional on PFAS. The unemployment insurance agency that wronged so many people in our state, we have not actually put money behind that fund over there. We could actually be implementing positive things for our schools, for trying to impact school funding. They're doing none of those things. All they're doing is punitive things that are trying to take away power from those who got and won their elections this past November.
You mentioned Dave Robertson, state senator, and his former staffer Erica Farley, and clearly you referenced the investigation that is going on right now surrounding maybe something that she did for the campaign. In your mind, does that taint election-related bills that he has introduced, whether it's the Elections Commission or the quote-unquote dark money bill or what have you?
Well, again, one, I think the legislation on its own, regardless of who introduced it, is wrong and bad policy. This idea that you can strip away powers of the Secretary of State just because you lost an election. The idea that you want more dark money in the political system. There is nobody who's told me that they want that, So to me, it doesn't matter who is the sponsor on those types of things. Those are just irresponsible bills. But you bring up the point, and like I said, I read the media reports. Again, I don't know enough about what happened there, but at the same time, it does bring into question, why are we even trying to do these things at the last minute? And if the Republicans decide this is what they want their legacy to be, the voters will remember that for years to come.
Let's talk now about Governor Snyder, because obviously he has the final say in this. Before we get into what he should do with these bills, how do you think he's been as a governor overall?
Well, I've had a lot of concerns with the governor, from the beginning when, he instituted his tax policies that really stripped money away from higher education, really didn't focus on K through 12 the way he should have. And so, I've been a critic of this governor. You take a look at the response to the environmental issues, whether it's PFAS or Flint lead water crisis. I think the response to those were always slow and never enough. So, listen, and I've been very concerned. You know, my hope as we finish these last 2 weeks is that, you know, he'll think about, you know, the things that didn't go well in his, you know, first 7 years, the things that perhaps he was forced to do by the legislature, things that, you know, he would say that perhaps he didn't always agree on, but he was forced to do it to try to finish up his agenda. My hope is that he'll take a look at these ideas that are, again, circumventing the will of the people, and he'll veto those items as we go forward. You know, at the same time, there's a great opportunity for us to finish off this year focusing on real issues that impact people, especially around PFAS, especially around fixing the unemployment insurance agency scandal. There are things that we could be doing right now that will end in a positive note, at the same time, you know, solve real problems that are facing our state.
How do you think the governor should fund the environmental cleanup Clean Michigan Fund? He wants to do it by increasing tipping fees.
Well, we're very open to having that conversation, whether it's tipping fees. Democrats this summer actually introduced a set of bills that would look at a Clean Michigan Initiative bond, almost a Clean Michigan 2 that would focus on that.
He doesn't like bonding, though.
He doesn't like bonding, but listen, I think especially for water infrastructure, sewer infrastructure that lasts much longer than roads, I think it's appropriate to bond. I think you take a look at any community that's doing water infrastructure, they're typically bonding anyways. So I think there's a way to do that locally, and so we're willing to have the bonding question as well. I do think it is a issue that should be resolved by the end of the year. I do think we should put more money into water infrastructure as well, you know, that other Renew Michigan piece that he's talked about. And so, you know, as I've said to the governor's office and to the governor a couple weeks ago, you know, we're willing to have that conversation, because if you talk to anybody, they will tell you that infrastructure was an important issue, whether it was their roads or their water systems. People want that fixed, and it's an area that he's not done enough, and this legislature hasn't done enough, and they want to right that. There's a way to do that before we come to a close this session.
You obviously know about the supplemental that he has out there. What in there would you like to see more money put into?
Well, obviously PFAS is you know, a huge concern, and there is resources dedicated to PFAS in there. I think it needs to be bolder and bigger. We've obviously talked about making sure that there was a fund that would keep people whole that were accused wrongly by the administration on the unemployment insurance agency scandal.
You'd like to see some money there.
I'd like to see
that.
That money actually put in there. We've been debating that now for 2 years. It's time to actually fix that. You know, one of the biggest areas, obviously I represent Michigan State University, but one of the key areas that this governor has not funded well is higher education. I think you should be able to find more resources to go out with higher education at the end to sort of make up for the fact that, you know, he cut all public universities by 15% in his first budget. They're barely back to even, but does not deal with the inflation they've had to deal with. So there's a lot of key areas that he should be dealing with. I do think, you know, some of the areas that have been found faulty, especially around DHHS and Children's Protective Services, those are right things to be doing in this supplemental. You know, that scathing Auditor General report that came out and the federal investigation that will probably come because of that, you know, is another black eye on the administration, and that we need to fix it.
If you had the power to adjourn the legislature sine die tomorrow, would you do it?
Absolutely. I think there are some things that I'd like to see done, but, you know, I've got four bills under consideration in the Senate that I hope will there be some action, but I would sacrifice each one of those and all these things because of the bad policy that is in front of us. I'd rather kick the conversation into the new administration as well as the new legislature because of how bad some of the bills that are outstanding right now. And so I'm willing to lose things that I care about in betterment for the state of Michigan.
Just to end it all right now, what do you think the chances are of that, though?
I don't think
you're gonna take control of the gavel or something. Do you need a majority vote?
You do need a majority vote. I also need the Senate, obviously, to make a decision as well. I'm sure that there's enough people amongst the Democrats and Republicans who are ready to get out of here. But at the same point in time, that won't happen. So, but at the same point in time, I think it underlines the point that we should be doing things that the people care about, the things that they sent us for. The election was a strong rebuke on some of the things that we're seeing right now. And so why not walk out of here, you know, trying to help put the real amount of resources and standards for PFAS, fixing the unemployment insurance fiasco, making sure that everything that we need to help the citizens of Flint are actually put into place. Because the people who are coming back, people who are coming in, don't really know all the issues that we do. So there's a lot of things we can do these last 2 weeks. You know, unfortunately, it doesn't seem like some of those will actually get to the final end.
You know, if you adjourned tomorrow, you would sacrifice your ability to give your goodbye speech. And what a travesty that would be.
I'm sure that no one's going to be really missing the fact that they have to hear me one more time on that mic. So I'm sure that might be reason enough to get some of the Republicans to actually vote for it. So,
Sam Singh, House Minority Leader, thanks for taking some time here with us.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Sam Singh for taking a few minutes with us. Also, Jack and John and Jacob, I was just busted. It looks like Francis and Finn's new offices upstairs have been discovered by the property owner here, Mr. Rurink. And I don't know, hopefully they're not evicted anytime soon. I wasn't aware of how elaborate they made their offices here on Friday.
Well, I just feel bad for the greater Lansing region for missing out on this prime real estate opportunity or prime office rental location just above our offices here.
Because we just redid that just a couple years ago, and those are actually really nice offices. John and Vicky were up there for a couple years till they've moved around the building, and now Finn and Francis have just taken up their offices right up there. They're doing some hard business.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, as the administration reporter, I can assure you that I don't know if they would be in violation of OSHA or anyone would be due to their age. You know, this is a 21st century economy. You know, everyone's their own boss, you know, driving Uber cars and whatnot. So, you know, I think this is just, you know, where we're seeing things going here.
And I guess if we need their contracting services for maybe some drawing or maybe some type of stop motion videos with American girls or something like that, we know where we could go. We could do it in-house.
Oh, yeah.
In-house contract.
Well, I've seen the artwork from your daughter throughout the office here, and I think we could do a kind of a court reporter sketch of some of our committee hearings, you know, people yelling at each other, capturing the drama of the lame duck session.
We may have something there. So next time we have oral arguments, we'll send her over there, see what you can do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, we've got that problem situated. If nothing else, we've solved one problem today here at MERS World Headquarters, and that's going to be enough for us and enough for the edition for today. Thanks to AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Until next week, for Jacob Kanzler, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.